You're listening to the Home Base Podcast. This week, we're going to look at all the hot button issues that are sparking mom wars. Don't worry, we're just going to look at the facts and leave all the emotions at the door. So put the gloves down and take a listen. Welcome, welcome to the Home Base Podcast. I am your host, Megan Poteet. What if I did the entire podcast like that, guys? Wouldn't that be kind of weird? It would be weird. Be a little creepy, I think. All right, so welcome, welcome. How are you all doing this week? I hope your guys' weeks were awesome. My week was jam-packed. We had a lot going on this week. Lots of busyness. And it's been nice this week. It was kind of toasty at the beginning of the week. We were in like the 80s and 90s, and then it dropped down the past couple days. It's been the 70s, and today, Saturday, because it's Saturday for me, my recording day, our high today was only like 66. It was gorgeous out. Blue skies, big puffy clouds. It really started feeling like fall, and I'm all for it. Bring it on. So exciting. Awesome stuff. So we have some exciting things today that we're doing. And I'm sorry, I just got really distracted, guys, because it just dawned on me that today is my 9-month-old's 9-month birthday, and I completely forgot to take his 9-month picture. Whoops. Guess we'll be doing that a day late. Oh, well. He's sound asleep now. I'm not waking him up for anything. So, this week, I'm a little nervous, but I'm really excited, too. We got such great feedback from last week's episode. I told you guys I had my little, not really breakdown, I'm going to use epiphany, where I just kind of decided that I needed to own my parenting decisions, and I needed to be confident in them, and I needed to stop second-guessing myself. And so, I kind of talked a little bit about confident parenting, and I got such great feedback from that episode that I wanted to kind of do something along the same lines, but expand it. So we're going to trudge into very scary waters this week, and we're going to brave the mommy wars. I know everybody out there has probably had it with all the mommy wars, and I hear you. I get so tired of getting on to social media, getting into any kind of forum, reading articles. You get on Twitter, and it's everywhere, and it's craziness. It's so crazy. What starts out as a compliment gets twisted into this derogatory remark, and before you know it, you're in the middle of this enormous battle, and it's just crazy. And then you have the people that are out on a mission to like make this big impact in who knows what. Sometimes I think a lot of people forget what they're really doing when they're trying to make these great big impacts on the parenting society. But what do you do if you're a parent and you are trying to make some decisions and you're trying to figure some stuff out, and you get online, you start doing some research, and you hear this side and that side and this side and that side, and you feel like a ping pong ball going back and forth, and before you know it, you're in the middle of this war trying to figure out an answer to your sleep training question, or your eating or feeding or introducing foods. You know, there's things that as a new parent you don't have the answer to, and you're tired of reading 20 different books on the subject, and all you want is just some people's experience, and it's exhausting because the wars are everywhere and they are raging and there's no ends in sight. I can't talk tonight, guys. Forgive me. Whew. So, what are we going to do? We are going to hit on some of the really key hot button topics, but instead of taking a side, this is a judgment-free zone. We're not taking sides here. What I'm going to do is break down the pros, the cons. I'm going to disprove the myths for you. And I'm going to just share the facts so that you can listen to this, make your decisions. You don't have to read a bunch of commentary about this person's experience and this person's opinion on this and blah, blah, blah. You can get it here, straight up facts, no judgment. It's what I'm trying to do today. There will be a couple topics that I will just give you, I'm not even going to say my opinion. I'm going to give you a suggestion, and you can take it or leave it. You don't like it, good for you. If you do, awesome. Whatever, but I'm not here to preach at you this week. So, I'm very nervous though, because it seems like no matter what your intentions are with these hot button topics, everybody's going to hear something about it that they don't like. So just bear with me. I really have great intentions for this week, and hopefully it comes across that way. I just know, me personally, I'm so tired of hearing about all the mom wars, and I just want the facts. You know, I just want the facts, and I want someone to say, this is a myth, this isn't real. So that's what I'm trying to accomplish for you guys today. So before we get diving into that, I wanted to share some stuff with you. I was so excited today, and I know I talk about local libraries a lot, and I cannot say enough about local libraries. You guys, look up your library in your area. Get online, look at their calendar, look at their events, see what they got going on. Because our library, which we live literally right down the road from it, we walk to it all the time, it's a nice little stroll. They had such a great little, like, kids fair almost today that I took my son to. And they had, like, story time, they had baby story time, they had crafts, they had family health screenings. They had all sorts of different themed areas. I'm trying to think here. They had a dress-up area where you could dress up and pose and take funny pictures in front of a mirror. They had a play area with all sorts of different activities out. The craft area was super cool. They had some different little crafts you can do. And then what was really neat is they had like this folder, and in the inside, one half of the folder had these songs you could sing, and the other half had a big piece of felt in there. So it was like a felt board. And then you went down this table and you picked up different pieces of felt that went, that correlated with the songs in the folder. So basically you got to make this little felt board and you got to take it home. It was so cool. I was so impressed. They had a room dedicated just to STEM activities, which if you guys are listeners of the podcast and you've listened to my STEM episode, you know how I feel about STEM stuff. It's important. So it was really, really cool. Clifford the dog was there, and the Pout Puffer Fish was there too, and that was really fun. And the major star of the day was Jim Gill was there. So we got to watch Jim Gill perform a lot of his fun finger plays and fun songs. So it was so much fun, you guys. So much fun. And all of this just going on at the local library. It was all free. It was amazing. We got to see Jim Gill. And if you don't know who Jim Gill is, I'm going to try and not, like, cry right now. I'm going to try and keep in mind that not everyone listening to this has been a teacher like I am or was. And so some of you may never have heard of Jim Gill. If you haven't, there will be a link to a YouTube video of his in the show notes, or something of his. I will get something of his in the show notes so you can click on it and go check out Jim Gill. He's a lot of fun. He takes a lot of your classic fun kid nursery rhyme songs and he puts this really goofy twist on it. He's a riot. I really suggest checking him out. He has a ton of different CDs and he's written a couple different books. They're really great. So we had a lot of fun today, and I just really want to encourage everybody, go check out your local library. And it seems like this is the time of year with school kicking off that a lot of the libraries do some kind of family events to try to get everybody, you know, amped up for school and amped up for reading. So go check it out. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The next thing I want to share with you guys before we dive into our mom wars, I found the most adorable, sweet poem online. Where else but Pinterest, of course. I came across it and I just thought it was so cute, and I can't wait to print off my own copy of this poem and put it in my son's room because it's just so sweet, and I think it's so comforting to me. I might even turn it into a bookmark or something for myself. But I wanted to share it with you guys, and then if you also love it, you can find it on our Pinterest board, our Homebase Podcast Pinterest board, which is on my personal Pinterest account for Megan Poteet. And if you want to find that, you just need to go to our website, which is homebasepodcast.com. And there's a big, huge Pinterest link on our website, and you click on it and it takes you right to my Pinterest account. And our Homebase Podcast board is on there, and we have all sorts of awesome stuff on there. Basically, anything I've talked about in the episode is on there. All the blog posts, all the podcast episodes, everything. So go check it out. So I'm going to read this for you guys. I don't know. I looked all over the website. I don't know who wrote this poem, so I'm sorry. I can't give the credit to whoever wrote it. Whoever you are, you did a great job. It's very sweet. So, but I just want to share it with you guys because I think it's awesome. All right. I am your mother. You are my child. I am your quiet place. You are my wild. I am your calm face. You are my giggle. I am your weight. You are my wiggle. I am your dinner. You are my chocolate cake. I am your bedtime. You are my wide awake. I am your lullaby. You are my peekaboo. I am your goodnight kiss. You are my I love you. Isn't that so sweet? Oh, I love it. I think it's so sweet. So sweet. So I had to share it with you guys. Hopefully you all weren't just like, oh my gosh, this woman's crazy. But I thought it was sweet. I wanted to share it. So I did. All right. We are going to take a short break, and then everybody put the gloves down because we're going to dive into Mom Wars. But this time the gloves are off, and we're going to do it safely with no drama and no judgment. Just the facts here. We'll be right back. And we're back, guys. All right, so let's dive in here. So our first hot button mommy war topic is crying it out. So when we're talking crying it out, we're talking about sleep training, of course. Your kids don't want to go to sleep. They're in their crib. They're screaming and crying. Do you let them cry? Do you not let them cry? So let's break this down. Pros to letting them cry it out. They learn to self-soothe. This is a skill. We all have to learn it at some point. It's convenient to get it out of the way when they're little. And they're not as vocal. So it is a skill, something they learn. So there's a pro, letting them cry it out. They learn the skill of being able to self-soothe. The con, it's really hard to listen to. As a parent, it's torture to hear your kids cry. And, you know, obviously that's very hard to do. And that con right there gets a lot of people to not go with the crying it out. So pro, con, let's talk about the myths surrounding crying it out. So myth number one would be there's a lot of talk about when your child cries for extended periods of time, there is a fluid in the brain, it's called cortisol, your cortisol level spikes, and then, you know, people like to say that the cortisol, when it's spiked and the levels are high, it can deteriorate the cells in the brain. This is not true. So I have spoken with several different pediatricians on this topic, and there is no validity to this. So just completely take that myth and just push it aside because it's not true. The second myth surrounding this is a lot of parents, and this is probably the myth that really catches people up and they really get concerned about, is they're worried about their kids not thinking that they're loved or that you care about them. You know, they're in there crying and you worry that they're going to think that you abandoned them and they're not loved. I love what me and my pediatrician had this conversation, and I love his answer was that you love on this child 23 other hours in the day, and if they have to stand in their crib for an hour and cry, he's like, they are not going to think they're not loved because you are doing everything in your capabilities to show them love the rest of the day. So he's like, that's really not even a thing. So tell yourself that that is not a thing. Your child is not thinking that. And actually, your child, when they're in there crying, they're just mad. They want to be with you. They don't want to go to sleep. They don't know what's good for them. You know they need their sleep. They don't understand that. And they're just angry. And they just need to sort this out. So, what can you do? If you're for the crying it out and you think you can handle it, then let them cry it out. Let them learn to self-soothe and get that skill down and you can move on. If you can't stand the letting them cry it out, here's a couple different options. Option one, and I know a lot of parents really like this, is you can put them in their crib and tell them, you know, it's time to go to bed, have your little routine, whatever it is. If it's take a bath, put on lotion, diaper, jammies, and then go to bed, do that. We tend to do bath and then we come out and we play while we watch a few minutes of cartoons, and then we go in his room and we put on our jammies and our diaper. We say goodnight to all our animals in our room, and then we turn on our noise machine, and then we have a diffuser in there and we go and the diffuser lights up and he likes to stick his hand in the mist that spritzes out the top, and we do that, and then we sit down and we nurse and we go to sleep. I know, I'm one of those really bad parents that nurses her kid to sleep, and trust me, I'm sure it will probably be difficult to stop that at some point, but hey, we all choose our choices. So one of your options you can do is do your routine, put them to bed, and tell them, you know, it's time to sleep, mommy's going to be back in a few minutes, and do that. Put them in there, leave the room, do how, you know, set a timer if you want to. I suggest doing the timer because it helps keep you on track. You know, you could say, I'll be back in a few minutes, and then 10 minutes later, you're like, oh, shoot, I didn't go back in there. You know, or you could have the opposite. You're standing outside in the hallway going, oh, they're crying and screaming, I want to go back in there, but it's only been 30 seconds. You know, go out, set a timer, start with 1 minute and go in every minute and slowly extend it up to a few minutes, and eventually they'll fall asleep and get tired. It is very hard on you, but it's a thing you can do. And then each night you can slowly make the time increments bigger and bigger. Another thing is a lot of parents, they get like a chair and they set it in the room. They slowly scoot the chair closer and closer to the door each night, and they slowly work their way out of the room. So there's that option. The other option is to give them what they want. To just not do the crying it out method, to give them what they want, and, you know, if that is you rocking them to sleep or you reading them one more story, you know, just give into it. I will say there, I don't think I've ever heard of any, like, you know, 8, 9, 10-year-olds that weren't going to sleep by themselves. So they're going to grow out of it. You know, it may take longer and it may drive you crazy when they're 2 and 3 and they still need that rocking to sleep or they still need that story. But I think you just have to pick your poison. You know, it's you are the parent. You have to pick what makes you feel comfortable. You hate hearing them cry, and if the response to that is that then you have to spend 20 minutes rocking them to sleep every night and you would rather do that, then go that route. You know, it's really up to you. So There we go, crying it out. And that's how we're going to do this, guys. I'm just going to go through each subject. I would love to add tons of my input into it, but I'm really going to try and keep it real cut and dry because I don't want to get, you know, I don't want to give too much of my perspective. So moving on to co-sleeping. So co-sleeping, we're talking about your kids sleeping with you in your bed. For some parents, this may mean going to sleep together. This may mean they fall asleep in your bed and you come into bed later. I know a lot of parents, their kids start off in their bed, but then in the middle of the night, maybe you have a spouse or someone who works late shifts or something, and your child then gets up with you in the middle of the night. Or maybe you guys start in the same bed, and then once they fall asleep, you move them to the crib. So we're talking co-sleeping. That could obviously, like I just said, have lots of different faces. But let's talk pros. Pros to co-sleeping. More sleep. It seems like kids that are sleeping with a parent sleep longer. This is kind of my personal experience. I have started taking naps with my son during the day. I talked about that last week because I'm just getting to where I'm fighting him so much naps in his own crib. He stands up and he refuses to sit down. He screams and cries. And so now we just, we lay together on the floor, on the couch, in my bed, and we take naps together during the day. He has taken the longest naps he has ever taken since we brought him home with me. When he sleeps in his crib, it's like 30 minutes. We might get 2 or 3 30-minute naps a day. Whereas if he sleeps with me, he like does it all in one big nap. He'll do like 1.5 hours to 1 hour and 40 minutes with me. And then he'll do like 1 30-minute nap later on in the day. So he is getting more sleep. So co-sleeping pro, more sleep. And then the obvious one is bonding. You know, anytime you spend with your kids, hopefully you're bonding. I'm going to hope you're not deteriorating your relationship. You should be growing it. You should be bonding. So obviously sharing a bed and those moments together, you're going to have some bonding going on. Cons, though. For me... I'm not going to say for me. This is the reason why we didn't want to do co-sleeping. Well, one of the reasons. And I think it's one that people don't think about until they've already initiated co-sleeping. Your bed is kind of your sacred space. you know, that is a space for me and my husband to be together. We like to cuddle when we go to sleep at night, and you can't really cuddle if you have an infant between you. So sacred space there for you and your partner. That is one thing to think about as a con, that if you bring your kids in there, you're kind of bringing them into your sacred space. Another big con is SIDS. Sudden Infant Death Syndrome. I did an entire episode on it. If you haven't listened to it, you need to. We all need to be aware of how we can reduce our child's risk of SIDS. Co-sleeping is one of the ways that you increase. Not co-sleeping, you're going to decrease your child's risk of SIDS, because when you co-sleep, people sleep very soundly, and you can roll on your child, you can suffocate them. One of the more common ways is your kids tend to scoot down in under the covers, and you pull them up over, you know, your head or up to your shoulders, and unknowingly in the middle of the night, and you cover your child's face, and they can't breathe, they don't get as much oxygen, and they suffocate. Or they get strangled by all the covers. So co-sleeping does highly increase your child's risk of SIDS, so that is a big con to think about. Another big con is it is a hard habit to break. Just because it is such a bonding experience for parent and child to sleep together. Children are automatically going to feel more safe. And once you introduce that safety net, it's a hard thing to take it away. So it is a hard habit to break. And, you know, like I said, I don't hear of very many 8, 9, 10-year-olds that are still sleeping in their parents' beds. So, I mean, it's not that you can't break it. It is a more difficult thing to break when they are in their toddler years. This is another one to think about, and I think it really just depends on how you do co-sleeping in your house. But one thing to think of is if you have kids that, you know, like I have a 9-month-old, and he would roll right off of my bed. So if he's going to sleep with me, then I have to go to bed when he does. And he goes to bed at 7 o'clock. I'm not going to bed at 7 o'clock. I have to have some me time. So then the answer is either I go to bed at 7 or he stays up later. So late bedtime, and that can be a negative for obvious reasons. Your kids need more sleep, and then you're eating into time that you could be spending, you know, doing things a grown-up wants to do. So, another con. So, what can you do? What can you do? If you want to, early on, you can use a bassinet. If you are wanting to co-sleep, and that's something, you know, when we first brought my son home, we just couldn't imagine putting him in a crib all by himself. It just seemed crazy. You know, this person lived inside me for 9 months, and then to go put them in this crib alone just seemed so weird and foreign. So we went the bassinet route. We got this really nice bassinet that had a metal structure, and it actually was very large, and we put it in our bed between us, and it was incredibly uncomfortable because both of us were about to fall out of the bed. But we did it for about a month or so, and then we finally were like, okay, you've got to go in your crib because we need to sleep. And actually that was one of the pros. When I was talking about more sleep a few minutes ago, not only is it more sleep for your kids, some people do it because they think moms will get more sleep because then they can just nurse in bed and they don't have to get up and go and nurse. And yeah, and that is the one thing I would just caution people. If you are nursing while you're sleeping and you're doing it laying on your side and your child is right there on your breast, a lot of the SID incidences have been with mothers nursing, because then they roll over or they're holding their child so closely to their breast that they can't breathe. So just please think very seriously before you make that decision. I'm not saying not make it, just make sure you understand the risks versus the benefits. But one thing you can do is the bassinet. And I did like that for that first month because he was right there in bed with us. There was no way for us to roll on top of him because this bassinet had metal poles that held the netting up. So, you know, you weren't going to roll over a metal pole. And it was right there, so I could literally sit up, pull him out, nurse him, put him back in, and then lay right back down. I didn't have to get up or get out or do anything like that. So that is one route you can go. And then if you do something like a bassinet, when you want to start transitioning to their crib, the best way to do it is then during the day, start introducing their crib during naps, and then just slowly, you know, one night try it out, putting him to bed in their crib. So that is a route you can go, something to think about. And if you're not keen on having a bassinet that is in your bed, they do make these great bassinets that come right up to the side of your bed. So they're right there. You can see them. And that's another great option. All right, we're going to move on to the next one. This one's going to be fun. This is like so stressful to me. Spanking. There's tons of data to back up each side of the spanking war, okay? So to spank or not spank your kids, we're talking about a form of punishment. Most of us grew up with it. And like I said, there's tons of data that shows that some people grew up and turned out just fine. And then you have the completely opposite end of the spectrum of the people that were very abused and didn't turn out so great. I think what we need to look at with the whole spanking war is we need to step back and say, what is the ultimate goal with people who spank? Our ultimate goal is to teach boundaries and consequences for your kids' actions. So you need to have some kind of disciplinary guidelines set up in your house. Make sure you and your spouse are on the same page. This is how we're going to handle things. You know, whether you do a strike system or just have some kind of system in place. Talk about this system with your kids. Let them know what is grounds for, you know, whatever your severe punishment is, whether it's spanking or grounding or withholding the car keys or TV time, or, you know, outline what your different punishments are and what classifications they are. This sounds crazy, but your kids need to understand what is going to, you know, you need to be consistent, and your kids need to understand what is the disciplinary realm, because you can't, you know, your child refuses to eat their dinner. Oh, that means you're going to, I'm trying to think here, because I don't want to just use spanking. We'll say, you know, no, I want to do something severe, though. You're grounded, okay? So your kid refuses to eat their peas at dinner, and you're like, oh, you're grounded. Your child pushes their sibling, and you're like, you're grounded. Those two things, you know, maybe aren't quite the same extreme. They might not both need to be disciplined in the same way. So maybe one scenario they lose TV time, another scenario they're grounded. Your child punches you in the face, maybe they're grounded for life. You know, you need to have different levels, and you need to make sure that they understand what those levels are and they understand what is expected of them. And just keep in mind, your ultimate goal is to teach them boundaries and consequences. If you feel that spanking is the best way to do that, that is your parenting choice. If you feel that it's not, then it's not. I would say one thing I have found really helpful when I was teaching is sometimes I took a day. If there was a scenario where a child acted out and I was extremely frustrated, you never want to punish in anger. You never want to do that. You know, if you're really angry about something, you don't want to lash out in anger and say, oh, you're grounded, or you get a timeout. You know, you want to make sure you are doing it calmly. You want to do it in a way that you can explain to the child, I'm not really happy with how you handled that with your brother or sister. I don't appreciate that you just punched that other child. How would you feel? I don't like that. And so now, because you've done this, you are going to get this consequence instead of just lashing out. So a lot of times I would take a day as a teacher. I would write down a note to the parents and I would explain to them, this happened today. And sometimes I would just say, you know, punishment pending or something. And we would kind of decide what we felt would be appropriate. Sometimes we had that conversation with the parents. This isn't a teaching podcast though, so I'm not going to get into that too much. But, you know, it is okay to take a day, take a couple days. You know, sometimes if you're dealing with teenagers, you need a week to calm down because they can be extra challenging. But it is okay. I think it has been drilled into us that you have to punish on the spot, and that is not so. Your child knows when they've done something wrong. They understand. If you have properly laid out the boundaries, they should understand. So don't be afraid to take some time and figure out the best way to handle a situation and to calm yourself down. Secondly, something to think about, how you punish your children or how you handle those situations in your household is your business. I feel like a lot of people, they get very vocal about it, and I think that has caused a lot of problems. I feel the people that are very anti-spanking are the people that they hear a lot about it because people are sharing it way too much of what they're doing in their household. And I also feel like these people that are anti any kind of spanking or physical altercation is because they've seen parents do it in a parking lot out of anger, you know. So if you're calming down and keeping it to yourself because it's your business, I don't see why there should be a problem. One word of caution to people that are anti-spanking, and this is coming from a teacher's point of view. I have been in classrooms where this has happened, and so I just really want to share this word of caution. A lot of people, when they witness something, whether it be a parent physically spanking a child or just grabbing them roughly, or maybe they see a child that has a bruise on them, think very carefully before you go calling Child Protective Services. Because I think a lot of people, they jump to the mindset of that parent is spanking, that's abuse, I need to call the Child Protective Services and, you know, get them taken away. They'll be happier. They'll be out of that awful household. You do not know what the foster care system is like. I think it is pretty common knowledge that there are many financial benefits to being involved in the foster care system, and unfortunately, that can be taken advantage of by families that should not be housing children. I am not saying all foster houses are bad. There are, unfortunately, some. And you do not know where that child would end up. And you would not want to take them out of a place that, even though it may be slightly abusive in your opinion, it is still home. It is still their parents. It is still their home. And you wouldn't want to take them out of that situation and put them somewhere that is different and scary and possibly much worse. So I really encourage people to think very, very carefully before making that phone call. Never make that phone call lightheartedly. Okay, that's all I'm going to say on that subject. So remember, never punish out of anger, and keep your punishment to yourselves, and to teach boundaries and consequences. That is the ultimate goal. How you think it is best to achieve that is your parenting choice. Organic food. We all know that GMOs and pesticides are bad. One of the cons that is all over the internet, I'm going to call it a myth because there just really isn't enough data to substantiate it. GMOs and pesticides causing autism. Truth? Maybe. Maybe not. We don't really know, so I wouldn't give it any credit right now. But we do know that they're bad. We do know they cause tons of different things. That's not, you know, that's not news. But the bottom line here is, what can you afford? I feel like a lot of people, they get on the whole organic food bandwagon, and that's great. It's great that you have endless money and you can put it into your grocery bill. That's awesome. Not everyone has that. So I really feel like what you eat and what you feed your family really reflects what you can afford. What are some things you can do, though? You can read labels. Guys, reading labels, learning to read labels, there's tons of websites, places you can go to. You can even get on Pinterest and you could just search learning to read food labels. You'll figure out words to look for. There's even apps you can download that are really handy that you scan a barcode and it will give that food a grade. It will tell you, you know, good, fair, poor, why this food is good, why this food is bad. And I'm trying to remember, I had one of these apps on my phone at one point, and you could even enter in, like, if you had food allergies or health conditions, and it will, when you scan that barcode, it'll rate that food and give it a grade depending on if it would affect one of those conditions that you put into the app. So, learning to read labels is super important. Read everything, everything. It never hurts to be educated about what you're putting in your body. Do your research. There's so much research about food out there. Yes, some of it is very contradicting, and I can only tell you to just trust your gut. You know your body, and if you don't know your body, you should probably start paying attention to it. You know, monitor your water intake. I know this seems completely disgusting, but knowing how your bowels work, those are important things. These things about your body, especially your bathroom habits, tell you a lot about what's going on inside you. So do your research, pay attention to your body, be realistic. What can you afford? What is realistic to your lifestyle? Maybe becoming vegetarian when you have a spouse or someone that is a serious meat eater isn't realistic for you. Maybe buying tons of produce isn't realistic for you because you don't have the time to properly clean and chop it every single week. Maybe you do better with prepackaged, sorted out foods. So you just gotta be realistic. Choose the important ones. If you want to go the organic route and stay away from GMOs and pesticides, but you can't afford, you know, to make everything in your entire kitchen and pantry organic, choose the ones that are important. Your meats, your poultry. Get on, actually, you know what, it will also be on our Pinterest board, the Dirty Dozen, and I'm going to pull it up right here and see if I can just read it to you guys, but there are a dozen different fruits and veggies. Here they are. So this is the Dirty Dozen. These are the ones that are all treated with pesticides, and you absolutely need to buy them organic. There are some fruits and vegetables that you don't necessarily need to buy organic because they're not as treated with different pesticides. So the Dirty Dozen is a common term for those people who are pro-organic, so you can look it up, but I'm just going to read them real quickly. Celery, cherries, apples, cucumbers, hot pepper, grapes, peaches, tomatoes, strawberries, potatoes, spinach, and nectarines. So those are the Dirty Dozen. That will also be on our Pinterest board, so you guys can go check it out if you want that reminder of what they are. But so I feel like the whole organic food thing, I don't even understand why it needs to be a war, honestly, because I really feel like it just depends what you can afford. You know, it's a personal choice, as are all of these topics, but it's, you know, it really reflects where your family is at and what you can do. We all know that pesticides are bad. We don't try to purposely consume them, but unfortunately, sometimes, you know, we all can't afford to shop at Whole Foods. There are different ways you can clean your food. You can, if you bring home produce and you want to clean it, you can put it all in the sink, fill the sink up with some warm water, some cold water. Cold water actually shocks your fruits and vegetables and helps them stay fresher longer. And you can add a little bit of cannot talk, guys. Add a little bit of vinegar to the water, and that will clean any dirt from the outside. I'm not so sure about it removing pesticides, because the pesticides are probably going to penetrate into the food, but it will help clean off some of that gunk. Vaccines. I'm not going to get super in-depth on this one, because I'm not a doctor, and I'm not going to pretend like I know all of this stuff. So I will say I feel sometimes we need to realize that we're not doctors, and we need to trust our doctors. If you don't like your doctor, go find a new one. You know, keep looking for a doctor until you find one you like. So trust your doctors, what their recommendations are, and to hear the pros and cons about vaccines, I am putting a link in the show notes to one of my friend podcasters, Dr. Mike of PediaCast. He does a podcast out of Nationwide Children's Hospital in Ohio and Cincinnati, Ohio. And he does an amazing job, and he's been doing it for years, and he has all sorts of great information. So I'm going to leave a link for you guys to go listen to his episode on vaccines. He breaks it all down, and he's really great about not candy coating anything. So episode 251, for those of you who are already PediaCast listeners, that is the name of the podcast, PediaCast. Episode 251 is about vaccines. And for those of you that just kind of want some info about, I know I was saying that we're not doctors, we need to trust our doctors. I used to kind of feel the opposite. I was one of those people that was like, doctors. but as becoming a parent, I've really started embracing that, no, they know what they're doing, and obviously they do it a lot better than I do. But he has an episode where he talks about the difference between pediatricians and family doctors, and he really gets into their different, the different amounts of training and schooling they have, and just listening to what these people have to do to keep their certification is really impressive. And so if you have kind of a low opinion of doctors, go listen to episode 273 and you'll get a high respect for how much education they really have to put into it and keep putting into it to continue to be certified. So go check out PediaCast episodes 251 and 273. And again, there will be links for those in our show notes, so you can go hear about vaccines. Next one we have is stay-at-home mom or working mom. Which path do you go down? And which one is harder? Which one is easier? This is a mommy war that is just, honestly, I think it's the dumbest mom war ever, to be completely candid. I really think it's just completely, kind of sad. I think we all need to ask ourselves which path is better for the kids. And to answer that, we need to ask which choice is more comfortable to you. If you want to be home with your kids and you're forcing yourself to work, I understand if you have to work because, you know, you're the sole provider, or maybe your spouse just isn't in a place, you can't live on one income, you know, I get that. If you don't have to work and you're forcing yourself to, and you would rather be at home, don't you think that that's going to come off to your kids? You know, if you're constantly stressed and you're not where you want to be, you're going to make a more stressful environment for them. And vice versa, if you're staying home with your kids, but you really would rather be out in the world with other grown-ups and not home all day with your kids, they're going to feel that. They're going to sense that. Take them to a daycare or to preschool or to school, and let them be around people that do this for a living and want to be with kids. Because let me tell you, everyone who is a teacher is doing it because they want to. Nobody goes into teaching who hates children. So we're all there because we want to be there, because trust me, the pay is not worth being there if you did not like children. Yeah. So I think we need to ask ourselves that. As far as which is easier, I think that is just, it's kind of a really stupid question, because who's to say what is easier for this mom versus what is harder for that mom? You know, I feel like a stay-at-home mom could look at it and say, a working mom, it's so much easier for them because they get to take their kids and drop them off at daycare, and they don't have to worry about them all day. And then a working mom could say, yeah, but you know what? I go to work, and I miss them all day, and it's so hard, and it's emotionally draining, and I just want to be with them. And they could look at stay-at-home moms and be like, that's easy. You're just home all day with your kids. Stay-at-home moms are like, you know, I have conversations with two-year-olds all day. I talk about Cheerios and trucks and, different TV shows and, you know, cartoon channels and, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I don't have any conversations with adults. I feel like I'm losing myself to these kids. I don't have any, I don't even know what popular music is anymore, stuff like that. So they could say that's hard, that's difficult. And so I think to say which is easier and which is harder, they're both hard. Motherhood is hard, it's difficult, it's straining, and each one of us have a completely different path. Your path is different than my path and that person's path, and each one of us can't walk in the other person's shoes. That is the one thing we need to realize and focus on. No one can walk in your shoes. No one can parent your kids as well as you can. So to say that your job is easier than mine is just completely false. We're all in this together. Sisterhood. We need to stick it together. And a brotherhood. I'm not trying to cut out the dads, too. Breastfeeding. I feel like the pros to breastfeeding are probably so hammered into everyone's skull, you could probably list them while you were sleeping. Some of these pros that have been fed to you since you found out you were pregnant and you went to your first doctor's appointment and they give you tons and tons of pamphlets. Some of these pros are cognitive development in your baby, reduced risk of breast cancer for you, better immune system, it's cheaper, so on and so on and so on. Tons of different pros. Cons. When I sat here and I was trying to look for cons of breastfeeding. It can be challenging. Breastfeeding can be challenging. Unfortunately, I'm not speaking from experience. I have been extremely blessed to have a son that loves to nurse. My milk supply has been great, and, I'm 9 months in, and my doctor keeps saying, you're still going, that's great, and I'm like, I see no point to stop, we're both loving it, it's awesome. But it can be challenging. You have kids that, you know, they really struggle, they struggle with latching, they have the different things like tongue tie, cracked, sore, bleeding nipples, you know, that's a challenge right there, and it's a painful one. I did have a little bit of that at the beginning. It's exhausting. At the beginning, it's exhausting, because you're up all night long. Every few hours, you're up feeding this little person, and you're tired, and especially if you haven't quite gotten into a routine of pumping, or maybe you don't want to pump, then your spouse can't help you with the feeding, so you're doing them all on your own. Whereas if you do formula, your spouse can help you with the formula. So it is challenging. That would be the con. It's exhausting. There are some challenges to overcome. The pros are a very, very long list of pros. A myth surrounding breastfeeding. The benefits are only until they're 1 year old. This is false. The benefits of breastfeeding extend for as long as you breastfeed. A lot of people think you have to just do those first 6 months or a year, and then once they get to a year old, it's like, eh, not necessarily. There are benefits. Those benefits still keep coming. And one thing I think people, when they hear of moms that are still breastfeeding past one, they automatically think that that's, you know, all they're feeding them. I would say some moms do a great job of balancing it with actual people food. I know some moms that just do a morning and a nighttime feeding just for the added benefits that are in breastfeeding. Oh, and you know what? One of the benefits and pros that I didn't put on here that is kind of obvious, it is so convenient. It is so convenient to breastfeed. You don't have to pack anything, no bottles, no nothing. You have food right here. Anywhere you go, you are constantly, you're locked and loaded. You've got the food supply with you. But yeah. But breastfeeding, it's a personal choice. Your child is going to develop either way. There are definitely, you know, like the cognitive development and the better immune system. There are obviously some things you're not going to get with formula. Their cognitive development is still going to develop. It just may not develop as fully or as quickly. And, you know, so there are things to take into consideration. I think it's pretty well known that breastfeeding is better. But if you are having such a challenging time with your child and it's stressing you out and you're to the point where you are dreading every single feeding, then you know what? It's not for you. And I think we all need to respect that as mothers, we have that choice and that is completely up to us. So it's a personal opinion. There's pros and cons. There's lots of pros. But I just wanted to make sure we knew that myth that the benefits do not run out at 1 year. They keep going. Birthing preference. This is another one that makes me really sad that this is honestly a mommy war that's up for debate. 'Cause as women, we alone get to experience this miracle of childbirth, and it's not easy, and we should be so grateful that we get to experience it, and we really should just, as women, we should be together in this community and helping each other get through it by whatever means necessary, because it is definitely a challenge. And I really, really dislike it when moms make it sound like it's not a big deal. Birthing a child is a huge deal. So I don't even care if you had one of those miraculous, beautiful births that happened in 3 hours and in a tub and you were in this zen place the whole time and you didn't feel your contractions because you were meditating through them all. I don't care. It was still challenging. it's a challenging thing and it's a miraculous thing. So just the fact that this is even a mom war is very disappointing to me because I think however you have your baby, I would love to say it's up to you, but it's not. I know I set out with the mindset of I'm not getting an epidural, I'm not taking any drugs, and I'm doing it naturally, and I want to labor at home, and I don't want a C-section. You know, I wanted this completely natural birth, and that just was not the case. I had group B strep, and so I had to, as soon as my water broke and I called, they're like, you have to come in, and you have to get so many rounds of antibiotics because you have group B strep, in your uterus, and you don't want your child to pick up that bacteria when they pass through. So I didn't get to labor at home, and I had a 21-hour labor. I had to push at two separate times because then, you know, you guys have probably listened to my birth story. If you hadn't, go listen to it because it was a doozy. But yeah, I ended up getting an epidural like 3 hours to the end because I was so tired. I hadn't slept in 2 days and I needed an epidural. You know, plans change. You can try to have a plan. It's not always going to work out. And the fact that we judge each other and make other women feel guilty about the way that their child came into the world when really we have so little say in the matter of how it happens is just baffling to me, and I think it is so sad when really we should all be patting each other on the back for this wonderful accomplishment of bringing a child into the world, because it is not an easy task. And it is a beautiful, beautiful task and a wonderful thing that we as women get to experience. So I really hope some people out here listen to this and we can all maybe stop the guilt trips. Good for you people that didn't have to have an epidural. Don't make people who did have to have one feel bad, you know, stuff like that. The ultimate goal is a happy, healthy baby, and that is what's important. Helicopter parenting. So we're talking about parents that hover. Parents that are on top of their kids 24/7. They're in everything. You have serious helicopter parents that are into every single piece of food they put in their mouth, how often they go to the bathroom, what their sleeping is like, you know, and I'm talking like older kids and parents are into this, you know. So, helicopter parenting, pro, the child feels loved. They feel safe. They feel like their parents have their backs. As parents, we believe they'll succeed if we hover all the time. We can help them succeed. We hope that they'll come to us for help. No harm will fall upon them if we're hovering over them all the time. If something's wrong, we can catch it and fix it, and we can keep them out of trouble. So that is a long list, and those are all things you're like, oh yeah, my child feeling loved and saved, out of trouble, succeeding, those are all great things. The cons. Your child can get frustrated. You're driving them crazy. They can feel like you don't trust them because you don't let them do anything themselves. Your child can grow up and not be able to handle confrontation. And they can't be able to handle day-to-day situations. They don't understand consequences because you never let anything happen to them. And at the very extreme, for those people who don't... who are anti-helicopter parenting and are so anti it that they neglect their kids. So, how can you find a healthy middle ground? Because I think we can both say there are pros to being involved in your kid's life, but there are cons of being overly involved, and we listed those. And then there's the very big con of being a neglectful parent when you're not involved at all. So, what is a healthy middle ground? I think the one thing we should notice in the pros and the cons, that the takeaway is you need to have open communication with your kids. Let them know you're there. Let them know what you expect. Let them know what the boundaries and the consequences are. And then trust them. Trust them, step back, let them do, let them be. But if you have that open communication that they feel comfortable coming to you and you let them know what all the boundaries are, they're going to feel comfortable. Kids are amazing of how comfortable they feel when they just understand the environment they're in. So it is your job as a parent to make sure their environment is safe and let them understand it, but then let them, trust them to explore that environment. We talked a lot about that 2 weeks ago when we talked about Montessori. And I know that's like a school setting, but we really should take that attitude to life, that as long as we have a safe environment and our kids understand the boundaries, they should be free to explore it. So have that trust with your kids. I don't think there's obviously good and bad with helicopter parenting, but I think we all need to just find that happy medium, and I think that happy medium will be found when you have open communication with your kids. This is a really popular topic for the past few weeks because we've all been starting school. Red shirting. What is red shirting? For those of you who don't know, red shirting is holding your kids back a grade. And this very commonly happens when you have your kids not start kindergarten. You have them repeat preschool 2 years, so they start kindergarten a year behind. Pros to doing it. These are the pros. All right, so I did the majority of my teaching was the preschool age, 4 and 5 year olds. So I prepped kids for kindergarten. I loved it. It was probably one of my favorite age groups to work with. And these are the pros that parents believe they are getting. Okay, so why a parent would do this. They believe it will give their kids a leg up on the competition because then when they do enter into kindergarten, they'll be a year older than everyone else or the majority of their class, except for the other kids that were red shirted. So they'll have a leg up on the competition. They'll be ahead of everyone else, so to speak. It'll give them an edge, more of a chance to stand out because they're older. They should be a little bit mature. And so parents believe it's just giving their kids a little extra oomph. You know, they won't blend in as much. I can tell you as a teacher, at the end of the year, we had to make our recommendations to parents of whether we thought their kids were ready to go to kindergarten or not. And as a teacher, I can tell you what we based our recommendations on. If we felt like a child wasn't mature enough to go, we would recommend they do another year. And when I talk about maturity, I'm talking about whether or not they still have meltdowns. If I have a child that spills a glass of milk and they have a meltdown, if I have a child who writes their name and they accidentally screw up on one of the letters, instead of erasing it or asking for a new piece of paper, they have a meltdown. It's incidences like this, I would recommend that child does another year of preschool. They are not at a level of maturity. I would recommend they do another year if they are academically behind the others. If I have a child who I see, and especially I used to work in a school district, so a lot of these kids were going to stay together throughout the next 12 years of school. So if I saw that there was one child that was in a group and they were behind most of the other kids, I would recommend they do another year of preschool just to get them more prepared academically so that they could be successful. Because you don't want a child that's going to go into a kindergarten classroom, they're already behind, and they just fall into that pace and that place of constantly being behind all the other kids. So academically behind the others could lead to falling behind. Needs a year to develop personality. This was the other reason why I would recommend kids do another year of preschool. And what I'm talking about here, and preschool is such a, it's a tricky age because you have those kids that are very outgoing and then you have those kids that are very passive and they kind of follow the outgoing kids around and they do what the outgoing child tells them to do. And there were a couple years that I had students and I would notice that they were very quiet and they would follow this child around. But if that child was picked up early and they no longer had that dominating personality, and I would see a completely different child come out, I would recommend to those parents that this child do one more year of preschool just to help them develop their personality, help them develop their strength, so that they feel like that they are just as awesome and as valued as that other child. Let them get their voice. And also, like I said, if you are working within a school district and you know your child is going to be in the same class as this child for who knows how many years, and if you notice those two personalities, you know, this dominating kid is dominating your kid, you might want to split them up. Give them a year to separate. I had this conversation, it was really difficult, one year with a mother of twins, and she had one of the twins was super outgoing, and the other twin was very, very passive. And it was a very hard conversation to have with her to help her understand that either the children needed to be in different classrooms or they needed to be a year apart. And it was a tough decision. I think she ended up going with different, they managed to get them in different classrooms. I think one of the kids went to a completely different kindergarten. The one child just followed the other twin around. And so it really ended up being a great decision on her part. As parents, don't be afraid to make those decisions. They're tough decisions, but sit down and really look at the pros and cons. But I really encourage people to don't make this red shirting decision just to give your kid this extra boost. I know some people do it for like sports teams. They're like, oh, if I, you know, hold my kid back, then they'll be older when they're a freshman and they have a higher chance of getting on the JV team versus the freshman team. And, when they're a sophomore, they may make varsity. And they look at it from all these big academic achievement standpoints. And I really think we need to look at it as, what is your child's maturity level at? Where would they flourish more? So that's my teacher's 2 cents perspective on red shirting. Really think it through. And I think, again, as are all of these decisions, they're personal decisions. And as parents, they're very important decisions that we need to make. All right, guys, that's all I have for you today. Those are all the topics for today. I feel exhausted. This has been such a stressful episode. I'm kind of scared to do Mom Wars Round 2. But I did want to let you guys know a couple topics that I have. We'll have more, but here are a couple of the things to look forward to when we talk about Mom Wars Round 2. We're going to get into sign language, whether or not to introduce sign language with your infants. Swim classes, whether or not to enroll your kids in swim class. TV, electronics, whether or not to allow screen time. Catering to picky eaters. This is a hot button one as well. So there's a couple topics to look forward to. I hope I didn't get too opinionated on there. I really was trying not to. I just really wanted to provide not really my opinion. I wanted to give you guys the facts, the pros and cons, but I also wanted to throw in there some perspectives that maybe you haven't looked at when you are making these decisions. Like I said, this is a judgment-free zone. You all are parents and you're all wonderful, and you're even awesomer parents because you're listening to this podcast, so you're already smarter than the rest. I know you all can make these decisions, and I just wanted to share with you all some different perspectives to think about. But I know you all are going to make great decisions, and you're all great parents. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be back with our parenting hack of the week and our mommy mantra. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. All right, we're back. I really appreciate you guys sticking in here. This is a long episode this week, so I promise we won't get this long on Mom Wars Round 2. I think I might have bit off one too many topics this week, but that's okay. So our parenting hack this week, this has been challenging for me, but I've been really trying to put it into effect. So author Janet Lansbury has written some really great books, and there's actually another podcast I listened to, and they had her on as a guest a couple weeks ago, and she was talking about talking to your kids, and that even at the young age of, my son is 9 months, she was saying, you know, we need to talk to our kids, explain things. And here's a perfect example of me epically failing, but I'll use it as an example. So today we went to the awesome kids thing at our library, and my son was given a sucker, and it was wrapped in a plastic wrapper, and so I just let him chew on it since it was wrapped in the plastic. It kept him happy while he got his little face painted. He got a little star on his cheek. It was so precious. But we started going out to the car, and I noticed, like, the wrapper was starting to get a tear in it. I'm like, oh, okay, you're 9 months old. You don't need a sucker. No. And so I just took it out of his hand, and he started screaming, because we're getting at that age that we can start doing tantrums. It's so fun. And I completely was kicking myself because I was like, darn it, Megan, you're supposed to be doing what Janet Lansbury suggests doing, which is, you know, talking to your kids, saying, mommy's going to take this sucker because the wrapper is starting to break. I understand that you're really enjoying eating the sucker, but the sucker is starting to come open, and you can't have a sucker. You're not old enough yet. It has sugar in it. You know, you could get tons of detail. But basically, the gist is explaining to your kid, giving them a heads up, I'm about to take this from you. Or, you know, maybe you're at home and you're about to go somewhere, or you're visiting a friend and it's about to go, saying, hey, in 5 minutes, we're about to leave. So basically, her whole theory is you need to talk this stuff out with your kids, explain with them, treat them like little adults, and they may surprise you of how smart they are. I have done this successfully. I've remembered to do it a few times. I the littlest thing, like I need to leave the living room and go use the restroom, and I'm sitting on the floor playing with my son, and I know if I just get up and walk out of the room, he's going to cry. So I say, mommy will be right back. Mommy's going to get up and go to the bathroom. I will be gone just a few minutes, and I will be right back. And I have noticed if I do this and I remember to do it, he doesn't cry. Whereas if I get up and just walk out of the room, he cries. And it totally makes sense because here we were having a great time and I just get up and walk out and don't say a thing. He's probably like, hey, where are you going? You know, but he can't talk. So it comes out in crying. Whereas if I just say something and I know he isn't fully understanding what I'm saying, he's going to get, oh, she must be going somewhere. She'll be back, you know. And as they get older, they're going to start understanding phrases like, I'll be back, if you use it, you know, the same way. Now, if you start doing it all Terminator-y, like, I'll be back, your kids might look at you kind of crazy. But if you give them a thumbs up while you're walking out of the room, then they'll be okay. That's a Terminator reference there. If you all didn't get it, shame on you. All right, so that's my parenting hack this week. I suggest you all to go check it out. If you want to get really into it, you can go check out Janet Lansbury's books are really great. And I think, actually, she has started doing a podcast herself. I can't remember what it's called. But if you just search Janet Lansbury, Lansbury, I believe she has a little podcast that's up. I think she's only 4 or 5 episodes in. Her episodes are really short, and she models some of this speaking for you. All right, our mommy mantra this week. It is another, I don't know who it's from. But I thought it fit quite beautifully with this week's topic. So it goes a little something like this. Motherhood is not a battle against other mothers. Motherhood is your journey with your children. I think that's such a great thing for us all to remember, that, you know, you weren't mothers until you had your kids, and you are in this journey of motherhood because of your kids. And don't lose sight of that and get caught up in these wars where you're trying so desperately to get other mothers to see your side. At the end of the day, the only reason you're even involved in any of this is because of your kids. So maybe involve them in the journey and in your choices, and spend a little less time battling it out on the internet. All right. So I wanted to, I know I told you guys earlier, we've got some awesome episodes coming up. I need to edit this all so badly. We've got some awesome episodes coming up. So make sure you go onto iTunes and subscribe. And those awesome special guests, just a little teaser, we have a special author that is joining us, and I'm going to leave who it is tip-top secret. And then we also have a licensed psychologist, a doctor with her PhD in psychology, will be joining us very soon, and I'm very, very excited about what we are going to talk about with her. It's going to make you think. Definitely. So make sure you go onto iTunes and subscribe, because we got some great episodes coming. And where else can you find me? You can find me on Instagram, which definitely go check out Instagram, because I just loaded a short video of Jim Gill on there, who I was talking about at the beginning of the podcast. And our Instagram account is rocking, let me tell you. We put some great stuff on there. And check us out. I always say us. And it's just me here. Check me out on Twitter. So Twitter and Instagram at Homebase Podcast. Homebase Podcast is our website with the blog. It's our email. You can send us some love via email. Hit us up. Send me some topic ideas on email. I would love that. Even if it's just an article or a book that you really read that you liked, send it to me. Let me see it. Let me read it. And we'll get it on here. All right, guys, this is all I've got. We're finally closing out here. So everybody have a great week, and tune in next week for another great episode of Homebase Podcast. Take care, guys. Bye.